Well, welcome back to the Motherlode Marketing Podcast. My guest today is a dear old friend of mine, author of the new book, The Great Fragmentation, Steve Sammartino from Melbourne. Sammo, how are you, mate?
I'm good, Cameron. How are you?
Good. I'm excited to talk to you, Steve. I always am. And you know, you and I have been talking for about an hour off air because we get talking and we have so much that we like to talk about. Why don't we get to the book, Steve? What is The Great Fragmentation?
It's the distillation of everything I've learned about marketing and business in the last 20 years, truncated into 20 chapters of goodness, which I think summarizes from a marketing and business perspective the change from the industrial era to the technology era.
And what impact is this going to have on the way that we market our businesses? Can you give me some bullet points?
Yeah, well, I think that there's a couple of bullet points. The first bullet point I would say is that everything is going from large centralized systems into highly fragmented decentralized systems. And then the net result of that is that we, for the first time, enter an equal playing field where the factors of production are accessible by pretty much anyone. And when I say the factors of production, I'm not talking about you need a little bit of money. I'm talking about anyone who lives in a modern developed economy has the superpowers that were previously only available to the world's largest and most powerful corporations. We are basically living with NASA in our pocket. And that gives us access to all of the production systems, distribution systems, advertising systems. And the price of playing now is more about creativity than it is the size of your wallet.
But most people take that supercomputer and just use it to play Angry Birds.
That's right. And you know what? And that is it. You nailed it in one, is that the question isn't whether or not you've got access to it. The question now is, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do with it? And so many people are missing the biggest opportunity humans have ever had to do something interesting, something important, something they want to do to grow a business, because they, I think all too often, playing Angry Birds, doing things that entertain them instead of understanding the depth of the opportunity that's been given to them. That's actually a really key thing, is that most people don't realize how big this is.
So from a business perspective, from the point of view of somebody listening to this who runs a business or they're in marketing and they're still struggling with how does this change the nature of, you know, how we communicate with our customers or with a broader audience, what would be a couple of things that you would suggest they think about?
Yeah, I think the thing that you would think about is, what can I do that gives me an advantage against mass? Because the thing that is interesting is that you had to really like what someone else decided for you going back. I mean, even going back less than 10 years ago, we still very much lived in a mass culture where the types of products or services that you would buy would be designed for a mass audience. And the big advantage that a small business operator has now is that they can say, how can I design one size fits one instead of one size fits all? How can I have a product that is put into the market that's either an unfinished product so the other person can collaborate with me and finish it? Or how can I design something by asking the audience exactly what they want and give them the exact thing that they want, because it's possible now. In the old days when we had a manufacturing enclave where things had to come out of a factory, we had to have mass manufacturing, mass distribution, mass advertising, and then we had to have prices that the mass could afford. What we ended up getting was a whole lot of average stuff that was kind of suited for everyone and no one at the same time. If you can design something that someone really wants that's suited to them, then all of a sudden you can do that. You can ask the audience, you can distribute it to them directly, and people will ostensibly pay a premium for something that is exactly designed for them and by them more than they would in an era of mass. And that's the key difference.
So that suggests certain challenges for businesses, though. I mean, how do you scale up an operation where you're custom building a product for a market of one?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing is, I actually pose the question, why do we need to scale up? Right? Because what we often think is, I want to build a business, and then when I build a business and people really like what I've got, then I need to work out a way to change the reason that they liked me in the first instance, which right. was that this thing was designed and customized and beautiful. I mean, I really like the idea of saying, why do we have to scale up in the first instance? Because maybe it is that what I want to do is create some amazing things, because I'm a modern technology artisan, for want of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
And what I can do is create things for people who love them and not scale up and still make an incredible living or a decent living doing something I really enjoy and making people really happy. And then, okay, so why do I need to scale that up? Why do I need to build an organization that's huge? Maybe I just want a small organization, or maybe I just want to be an independent operator. But another answer to that question is, I think for the first time, we're entering a space where a lot of the products that we sell can be scaled up because the tools allow for customization at scale. I mean, the most obvious one, and we're only at the very early stages of it, is 3D printing. So all of a sudden, the products that we distribute are digital, and where the product gets made is at the opposite end. So we don't make the product and then distribute it. We distribute a digital product, and then the product gets made at the opposite side. Mm. And so that enables anyone to scale a product, because the product is, you know, ones and zeros rather than something physical that moves around. So we then move from a manufacturing complex to a data industrial complex.
But as you say, that we're still very early days of that transformation.
Yeah.
One of the quotes from your book that I really liked, and I thought we could drill down, you say, there is no digital, there is only life.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites too. Thanks for picking that up. You know what? The reason that I wrote that in, and I, like yourself, Cam, have spent a fair amount of time in consumer goods marketing, was where I spent the first part of my career at companies like Procter & Gamble and these traditional industrial era manufacturing concerns. And I also spent some time in advertising agencies as well. And what I kept hearing was about the digital strategy. And it totally frustrated me that people believe that there is such a thing as digital strategy. There really is only strategy, and strategy is really the means from which we will achieve our objectives. Now, to have a digital strategy is a limited view of the world. It means that there's this separation between a digital life and an analog or a physical life, when reality there isn't. You know, I'm drinking coffee at one point. I've got the phone in my hand, which is using digital tools. I might, you know, I move seamlessly between the digital and the physical things in my life. So to have a digital strategy limits the viewpoint. And I think that we should have graduated from that now in terms of our marketing thinking. We're at a point in time where to have to point out that this is new and this is a new tool, you know, and it's not anymore. It's certainly not now. We need to move beyond that and just have a strategy. And some of the tools might be tools that have only existed a short period of time that are digitally oriented. But to have a digital strategy means that we really don't understand the world that we're living in. And I say to people, if you're talking to me about digital strategy, you don't understand what strategy is. So it's just part of the subset of tools that we have at our disposal to achieve an objective. And it's about time we graduated from that. I mean, I really wonder whether or not, you know, in the 1850s, whether or not, you know, the concerns of the day or the businesses said, now, what's our industrial strategy as they graduated from the agrarian era? I really wonder about that.
Nearly 20th century. So what's our telephone strategy going to be?
What's the electricity strategy for this one? How are we going to leverage the electricity market?
You know, I always tell clients that really your strategy, if you're doing a marketing strategy, the core of it is always about, who is our customer? What are their problems that we are trying to solve with our products or services? How are we going to make their lives better? And then how are we going to communicate with them about these problems that we're solving, why we think we can solve those problems better than the competitors, how we can make their lives better? That's the core to me of a marketing strategy. Then it's just looking at the different ways of articulating that, reaching people, the different channels, the different tools that are available to you to have these conversations with your customers. Some of those are going to be digital. Some of those are going to be print and, you know, more traditional forms of communication. But once you understand those core tenets of who your customer is, what their problems are, how you can solve them better than the competitors, what your value proposition is to your customers, doesn't really matter what the tool is. I mean, some tools are going to have strengths and weaknesses. Different, you know, there's a different etiquette, let's say, on Twitter or on Reddit than there might have been in, you know, a PR strategy. But, you know, then you're just looking at, well, what are the strengths and weaknesses of this tool as a channel? It doesn't require a separate strategy.
I agree 100%. I mean, and the thing that you said at the start there, Cam, which was interesting for me, is you say, how are we going to solve these problems and what tools have we got? And I think the reason we ended up with a lot of this digital strategy is people said, hey, we've got these tools. How can we use them?
Yeah.
So it was the shoehorning and the back-to-front nature. And that happens a lot in business. I mean, you, if you have a hammer, then everything you see is in the world is a nail, right? And so, and that's what happened in that digital world. It was more about, we have this technology, how can we use it, instead of, well, we've got these problems. And certainly from a business perspective, we need to look at the problem solution and product market fit. And that's what I think good marketers and good businesses do. It's kind of funny, because I think that a digital strategy, as it were, you know, the back to front nature of it, is probably more suited to a hacker environment, where you have emerging technologies and then the hacker community say, what could we use this technology for? I mean, if you want to have a digital strategy or a technology strategy, that kind of belongs in that kind of hacker mentality, where we try and find out ways to leverage technology. It's more of a scientific, experimental approach. It's certainly not one that solves business problems.
Unless that business problem is, how can we completely innovate around, you know, this sector that we're in, using these technologies? How can we do something new and brilliant? And
right, which is a different proposition to a digital strategy, which is, we've already got a problem we're trying to fix.
It's not a marketing
discussion.
That's right. It's a business discussion.
That's right. And that's a, yeah.
Tell you, one of the other parts of your book that I really liked is the retail cold spot conversation. Why don't you walk us through that for a few minutes? The rationale or the analogy you were using in the book.
Yeah, so there's some really interesting differences and nuances in the industrial world of marketing and the digital world. And one that I point out is in retail, and next time you go into a supermarket or into a 7-Eleven, pay attention to where the milk is. Now, it's not called the cold spot because it lives in the fridge. It's called the cold spot because they put it in the furthest corner of the retail outlet. So the things that people need the most, they hide in the back. And the reason that they hide that in the back is they want you to walk past the things you didn't know you needed, like potato chips or chocolate bars and what have you, so that you've got more opportunity to buy.
Impulse buys.
They can impulse purchases. And they make you walk the floor so that they get the full use of the space that they have available. So that is very big in large supermarkets, is the idea of putting the milk in the back corner so people have to go to it. So the items that people have to get are always put the furthest away so that people have to go there. And the analogy that I draw is that, imagine if Amazon did that. Imagine if Amazon said, well, you know, let's say it's 10 years ago and the Da Vinci Code is the number one selling book and Amazon's trying to sell the Da Vinci Code. And they said, well, we know people really want it. We're going to bury it 64 clicks inside the website and make it a complex algorithm so they go past all of the things they don't actually want so that we can sell them other things in addition to the Da Vinci Code. And clearly that wouldn't work. They'd be out of business if they did that. And so what we're seeing is, it's very easy for a lot of new companies born in the dot-com era and beyond, doing incredibly well because they're focused on serving the audience first and foremost and making it as simple as possible, rather than saying, we've invested all of our money in this factory or this retail outlet, we're going to make you serve us. There was this big difference in the industrial era, where the large organizations of the day were the fortunate few who had access to finance, to marketing, to business infrastructure, and we were subservient to that. And so we signed up to this industrial deal where it was, you do as you're told, buy the things we tell you, watch the shows we tell you, and we'll make you incrementally richer each year. You'll have more than your parents did and more than your grandparents did, and you'll have, you know, warm houses and private transport and 4 weeks annual leave, and you'll be able to fly on jet aircraft. And it was a pretty damn good deal. You know, you got to live beyond the age of 35, which was the average life expectancy in 1900, and we'll give you free education and all of this stuff. But the jig is up. And the jig is up because the things that industrial companies had are now evaporating and being less useful. And so digital companies have a different mode of operation where they serve the audience first. And they have to, because to break down the old industrial model, they need to be more generous in what they give first. And most often they give first and transact second, whereas the old industrial model is you buy first and then we might look after you and give you some kind of reward for your loyalty.
Mm.
And in terms of reward for loyalty, I mean, my favorite is the frequent flyer program. So here's what the frequent flyer program do. They say, you look after us. You give us absolute loyalty. You fly with us every time. We'll track all of your data and everything, and we might just give you, 1% of your expenditures value in flights, or 5% back. You might get a flight, 1 hour flight for free that would probably only cost you $50. I mean, it's inside out, the loyalty there. There's actually very little reward for all of the giving, and industrial companies tend to have that approach.
Mm. This whole idea of fragmentation, Steve, I'm fascinated with. I've been talking about for 10 years, particularly when it comes to the media and the fragmentation of people's attention. We have seen it happen with newspapers and television and radio over the last decade or more, where they have lost their ability to keep the attention of the audiences that they had once upon a time, as people fragment across a plethora of media online. From a marketing perspective, what do you think marketers should be doing to deal with the fact that it's a lot harder now to get the attention of a very large percentage of the population through one or two channels?
Yeah, I think that it's almost, you can count on it being nigh on impossible to buy or access an aggregated audience going forward. And what that means from a communication or an advertising perspective is that if you need to buy attention because you're boring, then the price of that is going to rise exponentially. So let me give you an example. No one cares about washing powder, okay? No one cares about 90% of the things that you find in a grocery store or a supermarket. But in order to compete, you still need to buy attention in a way. So that means that the people who are competing in that space are going to bid up the fewer times where audiences aggregate. So, I call it the Super Bowl mentality. There's going to be very few occasions, probably global sporting events or events of national importance, where there will be a whole lot of people watching one thing. If you're in the business where you need mass and your business model can't survive without mass, I would say that the fact that you can't buy that mass or even get mass distribution now without people seeking you out means that your business model is one that is not future-proof.
Right.
And the reason that it's not future-proof is that if you need to buy the attention, well, you need that so that they'll know that you're distributed somewhere. Even if it's a mass product that's hidden deep inside Amazon, unless people know about it, they won't seek it out. And so you need to have something that people seek out. You can't have something that you blast to them and say, hey, by the way, did you know we've got this and we need it? If it's mass by definition, I believe that the entire business model of mass is actually not sustainable in the future. And the media is the starting point of that, but it's only the first part of that fragmentation which will happen in all industries. So we'll see fragmentation in distribution systems. We will see fragmentation in terms of manufacturing. We'll see fragmentation in terms of pricing, where things get fragmented down to the nth degree, where things are priced based on where people are and how it gets distributed to them and who they are. We'll get different pricing. We already see that with things like dynamic pricing on airlines. They'll know if you've searched for a flight three times that you really need to go to that place, and so the price goes up for you based on the data that's on your digital footprint. So everything is going to be one size fits one, and if you need mass, it's going to be harder and harder to have a sustainable business model because everything is going down into highly distributed systems.
So again, from a marketer's perspective, you've talked a lot about the difficulties or the problems. How should we be thinking when we're developing a marketing strategy for how we engage these audiences in a way that is going to engage their attention?
Yeah. The one thing that if I had to choose one thing to get attention, and you know, in some ways we are in the attention economy, I would say that we need to stop trying to sell products that are finished. One of the things I mentioned in the book is that we're moving to the era of unfinished products.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that humans like to put their own spin on things in life, their own creative input. And, you know, the first era of the web where we see these digital mashups of people doing their own parodies and their own versions of things and taking disparate pieces of information and blogging on the latest news story with a different angle shows that we actually, more than anything, more than consumption, the thing that we actually want to do is create something. We actually want to create something. If the product that we're selling opens up the possibility of creativity and the ability to create something, then I think we're in a position where we can sell to the masses. And the way to sell to the masses is to put what I call in the market unfinished products. So an unfinished product is something that you give the pieces to the audience and the audience assemble the outcome. So the digital, all of the digital properties that we see do that. I mean, even if you look at the smartphone, as soon as the smartphone is in my hands and you and I buy the exact same model of iPhone, 32 gig iPhone 5S, mere hours after we've opened the box, our phones are different. They have different pieces on them. We interact with them in different ways. So they're ostensibly an unfinished product. If you look at the things that we need to sell, I mean, even shoe manufacturers, Nike, you can go and design your own shoes. So the future is about selling something that's unfinished. Then what we can do is we can target various people who have different needs and interests with something that they create themselves. So I think that that's one of the ways we can hack that system where we're moving to a fragmented model is to put, I think, a product which requires the end user to add to it.
You know, the fundamental challenge here I still find with a lot of clients is the concept of, in order to do that, you have to be able to have a conversation with your marketplace, with your customers. And that is still, I find, very difficult for most businesses to even consider. They still seem to be trapped in this mindset of, well, I make it and then I just tell everyone this is it and they buy it. And I don't want to have to talk to them unless something goes wrong, then they can make a complaint. But the idea of engaging an audience or a marketplace in a genuine two-way conversation still seems to freak a lot of marketers out, let alone, you know, the non-marketing personnel in the business. Has your experience been different?
No, my experience has been exactly the same. And the reason that I think that it is that way is because we've got to remember the indoctrination that we've had of how business and commerce has played out. I mean, anyone who's alive today who's over the age of 18 grew up in a world where you didn't have a say in how the product was unless you're in some focus group where they asked you what color something should be. And so this indoctrination of the factory makes the thing, we decide the thing that suits the most people on average and we produce that, we put it on a shelf, and then we shout at people in the middle of entertainment, right, to say, hey, do you want this thing? These are shiny and red and they're new and they're as seen on TV, so they must be good, because you couldn't afford to be on TV unless you were wealthy. And if you were wealthy, that means you know more than everyone else. You own the factors of production, right? And so this mentality, this indoctrination that we grew up with as consumers and that we learned in the what I call the Harvard Industrial Complex, and the Harvard Industrial Complex is the we know everything. We've studied it over the years. We know how commerce works. It's the Adam Smith Wealth of Nations kind of mentality, right? And the reason that marketers are struggling with this is because this is a change in epoch. This is different, right? For the first time in 200 years, all the rules are changing. Just like as we shifted from the agrarian age to the industrial age, everything changed. Everything went from handmade to manufactured. And now we're going to manufacturing facilities in the hands of everyone where people want to co-create and co-design. The interesting flip side is that humans, right, our operating system, the human OS, is 200,000 years old. That was the last time our DNA changed, you know, in the way that we are. So that 200 years of the industrial era where we didn't create stuff, where we just received stuff, is actually a 200-year anomaly. And so marketers have really got no choice but to get used to it. And that's the reason why a lot of industrial companies are declining. You know, you look at the Fortune 500, half of the companies in the Fortune 500 fell out in the last 10 years. And that's because they're not responding to the new market modality, which is co-creation.
Yeah, this whole idea of one-to-many marketing, I've been saying for a long time, is also an anomaly. You know, you go back throughout human history, we told each other stories, we sat around campfires. You know, even you go back, you know, 150 years ago, there was every community had 100 different newspapers, little, you know, hand-printed sheets for this union or that community where they'd be talking to each other. And the 20th century, from a marketing perspective, was a blip in the way that humans communicate with each other.
Right.
And, you know...
Absolutely. That's the point.
One of the key memes that I talk about with clients is that marketing is broken. Fundamentally, I believe, broken at its core. And the example that I often use is to ask people, okay, think about over the last 6 months. And I'll play this game with you as well.
Okay.
How many pieces of marketing have you personally been a recipient of that has substantially changed your life? And typically, you know, I'm talking about a piece of marketing that communicates to you a product or a service that you'd never heard of before, or a brand, and did such a good job of articulating a problem that you have in your life and how this product or service could solve that problem that you went and checked it out and, you know, bought the product or the service. How many of those off the top of your head can you think of?
Yeah, I can tell you the number. It's exactly zero.
Most people I talk to struggle to come up with one or more than a couple. Now, sorry, and then add to that the fact that all the stats say that we each receive on average about 4,500 pieces of marketing every day, and which is about 1 million pieces over the course of 6 months, and you can't think of one?
I mean, I can't think of one.
And what does that say?
The reason I know I can't think of one, the model is definitely broken. Certainly the communication side of the model is broken, okay? And we live very much in an environment of excess supply. I mean, if you're in a developed economy, there's no shortage of the things that you need to live a comfortable life. And so people are trying to gain a share of wallet by showing you something. But, you know, I can't even think of one. I was recently asked by Marketing Magazine. I do some writing for those guys, and they're looking for the greatest marketing campaigns of the year. And I had to send the editor, Peter, a note back saying, I'm really sorry, but I can't think of one. And I live my life in a marketing world. The only things that I can think of that have interested me in the last 12 months to the point where I've really investigated are memes of technology which are nuanced and changing. So the type of things that I'm excited about actually aren't products and services so much, but shifts in infrastructure. And for me, that's where the new marketing lives. It's actually people building new systems which change and solve new problems. So Bitcoin for me is super interesting, right? Yeah. And I think to myself, well, that is, I guess, a form of marketing by, you know, the secret Satoshi Nakamoto, who knows who he is. But that is an amazing piece of marketing because that solves a significant problem. But it's grander than the, hey, did you want to buy this widget? And all of the good marketing for me seems to be people who are rebuilding infrastructure which is more human in nature and disrupts false monopolies and systems. So, you know, things like the energy internet, 3D printing, cryptocurrency, crowdfunding has been a thing over the last couple of years that I've found incredibly exciting, and the websites that have done that have done interesting things. But outside of that, if I was to look at traditional brand marketing and what marketers have done, I still right now I'm racking my brain. I cannot think of one.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I totally agree, Steve. So the book is called The Great Fragmentation. Where should people go to get a copy of the book?
So it's available in all of the bookstores and the online portals that you buy books, everything from Booktopia to Amazon to Barnes & Noble, available anywhere online, both in e-format and traditional dead tree copies. And yeah, it's out there and it's available. And I would say if you're in the marketing world, this is something that is good because it's not a tactics book. I mean, the thing that I said in the preface is that if you're looking for a how-to book, go and find something else. This is not for you. This is something which assesses the landscape and gives you a philosophy, because philosophy is enduring and tactics are disposable.
I want that on a coffee mug. And at Sammartino on Twitter, of course.
Yep, at Sammartino. Say hello on Twitter. I love a good chat.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Cam. We'll be right back.